Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we're talking about policing in South Dakota and the impact of national events such as the killing of five police officers in Dallas on local law enforcement and the public they are sworn to protect and serve. We're changing our guest lineup a little bit from what you might have heard a few moments ago, because about 30 minutes ago I spoke with Rapid City Chief of Police Carl Jegeris. He was joined by Von Vargas, a member of the Rapid City PD's Community Advisory Committee, and also with us was Officer Tim Doyle. Doyle, you might remember, was shot in the line of duty on August 2nd, 2011. Officers Nick Armstrong and Ryan McCandless were killed that day as all three officers engaged in a shootout with a man named Daniel Tiger. Tiger died from injuries sustained in the shootout as well. A 90-page report from the South Dakota Department of Criminal Investigations indicated that Tiger's actions were unprovoked and that officers acted appropriately. That's the background for you, and now we're going to bring you the full, unedited conversation from a few minutes ago. Let's start with Chief Jegeris. Tell me, weeks like the one that we have just gone through, do they make your job harder, or do they sort of solidify what you already do and help you refine what you do moving forward?
Well, the answer to that is both, certainly. Last week was a very hard week on our staff, and I would imagine law enforcement nationwide. It really brought forward the dangers that do exist in our career. To watch what occurred in Dallas really put it right in the front of all of our minds that we are facing hate in our society, and that there are people that are willing to, unfortunately, turn our communities into war zones to express their messages. So at the same time, I would tell you that all of our staff has reflected on their commitment to this career over the last few days, and I believe that most or all of our staff, including myself, come out of that reflection with a renewed commitment to continue serving our communities.
When you have those conversations with officers who are working for you, what kind of leadership do you bring to the briefings or the personal conversations? Do you have a goal there, or are you mainly listening? How do you approach that from a leadership standpoint?
Well, I'm certainly listening to concerns. And after speaking with a lot of our officers throughout the day last Friday, my message that I delivered to our entire staff was that we need you now more than ever. And when I say we, I'm talking about our community needs our law enforcement officers to be focused and ready to serve, and our department needs them more than ever. Mm-hmm. And with everything that's going on in the nation, of course, already law enforcement officials are starting to talk about concerns with retention and the ongoing concerns with recruitment of police officers. So the question posed is, how are we going to continue to retain and recruit young men and women to come to our department, or especially in this case, the Dallas Police Department, to continue serving our communities in this capacity?
Have you seen, Chief Jegeris, shows of support from the community?
Absolutely. Our community here in Rapid City has shown overwhelming positive support for our service to the community. We've seen many symbols of it, but most importantly is the community members that just approach an officer while they're doing their work and just express appreciation and thanks to them. But we've had a display of flowers show up on our front steps. We saw a vehicle yesterday that had "Pray for Dallas" written across the windows. We've had food showing up. There's a cupcake drive has been generated out of this, and apparently one of the bakeries in town, anybody that writes a note to one of our officers, the bakery will deliver a cupcake. And so yesterday we ate very well, maybe not the healthiest, but it certainly put some smiles on some people's faces at our department yesterday.
Have you seen flares of tension as well, or mostly support?
You know, we did have a threat to our cruiser car show that was scheduled for Sunday, and that was a really complicated circumstance in that the threat was reported to a local media source here, and the threat included that police officers would be shot at that event, and that event is hosted by our department, and it's intended to be a community event to improve and develop and maintain positive community relations with a wide range of people from our community. And so it was really discouraging that we received that threat, but I had to put public safety at the top of our priority in responding to that. And so we postponed that event. That is an event that we host as a department, along with support from Main Street Square. And I'll tell you, I'm a little gun shy when it comes to putting our officers at known risk. Senior Officer Tim Doyle, who is here with me today, has been shot in the line of duty. I have ongoing relationships with the parents of our fallen officers from 5 years ago, and I am not willing to take an unnecessary risk for our staff.
Tim Doyle, let's bring you into the conversation. And I know you have been shot in the line of duty. You've also fired at someone in the line of duty. Tell me, an officer, when they are forced to use deadly force, what do they go through in those hours and days after a situation like that?
You know, it's a very stressful event, whether that officer is shot or not. You know, they have to deal with the fact that they just shot somebody and possibly just killed somebody. So it's not something that any of us take lightly. None of us wake up in the morning and hope that we're going to go out and use our firearm. It's something that we hope we don't ever have to do. And I don't think people understand what that puts the officer through. You know, I think sometimes with the way things are going in our country with social media and things that are put out there, you know, some people tend to look at law enforcement as a whole and they forget that, you know, we're just regular people like anybody else. We're husbands and wives and sons and daughters, and we coach sports and we're involved in our churches and our community, and we're not robots. We have emotions just like everyone else does. So when we have to go through that kind of a thing, that is in no way an easy thing to deal with.
Do you, when you hear of a situation like what happened in Dallas, five officers killed, others wounded, do you, Tim Doyle, mourn all over again? Do you re-experience some of the feelings that you had in 2011?
Absolutely, because law enforcement, you know, we're a family. Even though we've never met any of those officers in Dallas who got shot, we're still a big family, and we feel that. And I think the reason it's like that is because of, you know, it's kind of a unique job that we do. The things that we see and the things that we deal with and the stress that we're under. We are in this country, you know, we're a big family, so we definitely feel it when something like that happens.
What gestures, Tim, mean the most coming from the community when we talk about showing support for law enforcement officers, even though the situation itself is not, we don't have all the information yet, it continues to unfold. What sort of gestures of support are most meaningful coming from the public and from families and friends?
You know, for the most part, it's just when people say thank you. And even before Dallas happened, I still have people that recognize me from the shooting, which was almost 5 years ago. And they'll come up and ask how I'm doing, and that kind of thing. So you don't have to bring us cupcakes, although that's nice. just the thank you and showing that you appreciate what we do, that's not something that we see a lot. We're more likely to see the people who are angry and upset with us than the people who show appreciation. And yesterday I spent all day on the bike path and got quite a few waves and smiles and thank yous from people, and that's what means the most to us, I think.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, all of us every day have to decide that this is a job we want to do. We all know the risks, and you know, I'm sure a lot of you have seen the videos of the Dallas police, while they're being shot at, you can tell their main concern is protecting the public, including people who are there protesting against them. And that's the way we see ourselves. We're protectors of our city. We're not out there to be bullies. We're there to protect people, and that's how we approach our job.
Chief Jagras, talk a little bit about videos. And obviously there's videos from on social media from Dallas, from St. Paul, from Baton Rouge. When we watch videos like that, what do we need to keep in mind as the public? What do we not know that we need to consider when we see videos like that?
Well, here in South Dakota, I want to tell you that I am very proud of the law enforcement leadership in our state. And historically, we have put together a very solid protocol in responding to officer-involved shootings to ensure that there is an independent investigation that occurs and that there is as much transparency as possible. Unfortunately, in my two-year career as chief here, I've had oversight of four officer-involved shootings, and every single time myself or a member of our staff have immediately, as soon as reasonably possible, have gotten out and shared with the community as much information as we can. The South Dakota Attorney General, Marty Jackley, commits to having a thorough report back to the community within 30 days. I think that we have got a solid protocol, and when these viral videos occur, I think it is most critical that you rely on your protocol at those times, and even though you're very emotionally disturbed, that you give the process an opportunity to work. Yeah. And if there is wrongdoing, I will tell you right now that I will respond to wrongdoing. I will acknowledge, but I'm not going to do it instantly or viral through social media. I'm going to do it in a professional, respectful manner. And the other thing that I wanted to say related to that is every day in Rapid City, our officers are faced with being recorded in the community. They are recorded when they're on traffic stops, and sometimes it's the person involved in the traffic stop, sometimes it's an uninvolved passerby. When we respond to a major incident and there's multiple officers present, the public sometimes has as many as 10 or 20 cameras rolling on us. And it is sad to me that there is some sort of a desire to catch police misconduct for a viral video. And I'm just very proud of our department. I'm confident that the ability to capture a viral video of wrongdoing is very unlikely here, but at the same time, I'm willing to face whatever comes our way and to do it openly, honestly, and as transparently as reasonably possible under the situation that presents itself.
Vaughn Vargas, I want to make sure to bring you into the conversation. Talk to me a little bit about the Community Advisory Committee and some of the proactive steps that are happening in Rapid City to deal with things like racial tension or to deal with things like community policing.
Absolutely. You know, what happened in Louisiana and Minnesota and Texas are truly tragic, and any loss of life is tragic. And, you know, as a community, we see it, and as a nation, we're deeply saddened. But after speaking with the Community Advisory Committee member, we agreed that these events validate the need for our committee. And we're doing two things right now that will help strengthen our community, which includes our law enforcement agencies. So the Rapid City Police Department Community Advisory Committee just submitted a recommendation to the Chief of Police to incorporate South Dakota tribal history into its officers, into its officer in-service training program. Hmm. And this is something the community's been asking for a long time. We have Elizabeth Cook Lynn, who's a great author, wrote a letter to the editor in the Native Sun News in 2015, and she emphasized how important it is that we understand the historical context of Rapid City in South Dakota as a state. We live in a unique area. And like, for example, you have the 1883 Court of Indian Offenses, which was established by the federal government, which prosecuted Native Americans who participate in traditional ceremonies such as sun dances. But it's these type of laws that have left a lasting impression on our relationship between Native people and our government, and even to this day. So it's important to be cognizant of our past as we move forward, and I would like to thank Senator Mike Rounds for eliminating this type of legislation. But this is beneficial for our officers because it helps give them a perspective in their day-to-day life when they have, you know, interaction with community members. And my biggest minority here is Native Americans, and we just had an individual go through a similar training, and that was Officer Tim Doyle. So I guess I'd like to have him speak to that.
Go ahead,
about
Tim.
His experience of learning the history and how it relates to him to law enforcement.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to participate in the Lakota Lands and Identities bus tour, which is a week-long, 5-day event with Dr. Howe, and we went to various sites that are important to the Lakota culture, and he gave us some history, and that was a very eye-opening experience for me. And you know, we've had a few law enforcement officers go through it, but I was there with a lot of teachers and some other professionals, and talking to people who went through that with me. We're a little embarrassed about the lack of knowledge that we had with the history with the Native Americans in our country and in our state. So that was a great experience for me. We didn't have anything shoved down our throat. We were exposed to things and allowed to make our own, to draw our own conclusions. And it was, I wish it's something that everybody could go through. Logistically, I don't think that's possible. So we're trying to kind of capture the essence of that bus tour and bring it back to our department.
And another thing we're working on is to, I mean, the main objective for our community advisory committee is to strengthen the working relationship between the community and our law enforcement agencies. And one of the best solutions to doing so is to have a police force that matches the community. And the Rapid City Police Department and the Community Advisory Committee are both working towards that solution. So I've been conducting an extensive amount of research on this topic, and some of the benefits is that you have implicit bias is significantly reduced. You have a police force that can better penetrate crime syndicates, and you remove cultural and communication barriers. And there's a lot of benefits to the police force as well. You have interracial interaction. Mm-hmm. So you have officers who begin to understand one another. So, you know, those are the two of the biggest things we're focusing on, and I think it's great. I mean, it's something that the Rapid City Police Department has been working diligently towards, and it's an honor to really step in and help them focus on that solution. And that is one of the best solutions to having a better working, the best working relationship between the community and law enforcement agencies. And I was able to see that. So last week, I've been going on a few ride-alongs, and I went with an officer. And the first five calls of the night were calls to service. I seen somebody I knew in the community. Hmm. And it really changed how the interaction, I mean, it was just, to me, it was surprising. You know, when you have someone who's in deep distress and they see a familiar face and they're like, oh my gosh, Vaughn, I'm so glad to see you. Hmm. You know, this and this just happened and we need help. And to have five calls in a row was a true demonstration to me that, you know, this would be extremely beneficial for our community. So, but getting to that solution does take some work, and I wish it were as easy as advertising for minority officers, but there's a lot of barriers to becoming a Native American officer. So what the Rapid City Police Department Community Advisory Committee is doing is taking a methodical approach, and we're exploring unintended consequences that could be produced, whether this be good or bad, and we're trying to mitigate the negative consequences. So that's something that we're doing right now to really focus on that topic you brought up.
Chief, let's go back to you for a minute. And what I'm hearing, if I'm hearing this correctly, is that a willingness to discuss things that can make things better without anyone being concerned about being anti-police or adversarial. How do you create a culture where critique is possible, training, focus on professionalism, dealing with issues honestly, all that is possible without slipping into sort of a confrontational conversation?
You know, I think that's a complicated circumstance to approach, but I will tell you that I am committed to having the difficult conversations that need to be had. And I believe South Dakota Public Radio did cover our community meeting that we had late last year regarding police interactions with the Native American community, where we released our study that was conducted by USD. And you know, in that meeting, there was a QA session that did get tense, and that's okay. We need to have those difficult conversations. As the police chief, I am aware that I have to be, I can offend people very easily. So typically when I'm at a large-scale public community meeting talking about race relations, I explain that my intention is to be open and honest, and if I offend somebody, please let me know somehow. And it's certainly not intended, but we need to have the difficult conversations. And so I am at the table for discussions on race relations, and our community has faced a history of activism, and that has resulted in violence in our community. And I will just tell anybody that is interested in having a professional, respectful conversation that there is no need to conduct a demonstration or a protest to get my attention. You have it. My door is open, and you're welcome to contact me. And I'm available on Twitter or email. And so if there's questions or concerns, let's engage in a courteous, respectful discussion.
Sure. What email address and what Twitter handle?
carl.jaggeris@rcgov.org. And the Twitter handle is @ChiefJaggeris.
And we'll put that up on our website after the show, sdpb.org/DakotaMidday. Tim Doyle, I want to end with you. And I actually was reading the New York Times this morning, and they had a quote from David Brown, who's the police chief in Dallas. And he said, he was talking about the impossible demands on American police officers. And I wonder if you'd just listen for a minute and give me your feedback. He said, every societal failure we put off on the cops to solve. Not enough mental health funding, let the cop handle it. Not enough drug addiction funding, let's give it to the cops. Here in Dallas, we get a loose dog problem, let's have the cops chase loose dogs. Schools fail, give it to the cops, he goes on. Do you think that the demands on American police officers are impossible, as he thinks? Are they excessive? Or do you think that's just part of the job?
Well, I guess kind of both. First of all, I'm just going to say that I agree 100%. You know, the way things have gone in our society, we deal with severe mental health issues on the street every day. We deal with severe drug addiction on the street every day. And we find ourselves wondering, why do we deal with these same people and these same issues over and over? So there's a system failure that's going on. Basically, the county jails have kind of become the mental health facilities and also the drug rehab facilities, and it's not working. You know, meth is a big problem in our state and in our country, and we need more resources to deal with this problem. And you know, we only have so many options as police officers when we deal with these people on the street, and that's do nothing, do a mental hold on them, or do an arrest. And sometimes those may not be the best options for that person, but when all that gets shoved down to our level, that's the only choice that we have. So I agree with what he said. I think we do have more and more dumped on our plate and people in and these issues that we deal with, but you know, the way we look at it is we're going to go out there and do our job and do it the best we can.
Chief, at the beginning of our conversation, you used the word war zone and said some people are willing to create a war zone in some of our American cities. Those are pretty strong words. Why war zone? Why do you use those words to describe what happened in Dallas?
Well, I was at home with my family watching a live stream the night that it was occurring, and it made me sick to see sniper fire repeatedly aimed at law enforcement. And, you know, then, you know, the resolution to it was to use an explosive device to eliminate the threat. That is a sign, that is a environment that I've seen in foreign countries that are at civil war and having a state of unrest. That is not a scene that I would expect to see in an American city.
How different is policing in South Dakota than policing in some of those cities from your experience?
You know, it's different and similar, but the reality is anything can happen anywhere. We've had an active shooter situation already this year in Rapid City at the Cornerstone Rescue Mission, where I would say that we were very fortunate that we didn't have more casualties involved in that situation. There were many people around. It was a Sunday afternoon. A youth group from a local church had just finished serving the lunch meal to the homeless people that live at the shelter there. And there was somebody that was wildly shooting a firearm. And so we need to hope for the best, but be prepared for the worst, most dangerous circumstances, because anything can happen anywhere at any time.
Do you think there are police brutality issues in this country that need to be addressed or reformed?
You know, I think that the activist group recently sent a clear message that the shooter in Dallas was a lone individual, and to hold a movement responsible for that individual is irresponsible and dangerous. And I would like to just offer the reverse reflection of that, and that if there is an officer that engages in misconduct somewhere, to paint law enforcement with a wide brush and to hold all law enforcement officers responsible for the conduct of one is dangerous and irresponsible. And that is what we're dealing with right now. So there are issues, but we are at a state of transparency that is like no other in the past. And I assure you that if we were to have police misconduct within my department, I am going to respond. I'm going to respond appropriately. But like I said before, I'm not going to respond virally and instantly on Facebook or social media.
Von Vargas, any final thoughts before we close the conversation today? I'm sure it's a conversation that really never closes, but do you have any final thoughts for this today?
I guess this has just been something that we've been working for the past 6 months, as we've been really trying to understand the complexities of the criminal justice system and how often it gets pushed on law enforcement officers. So, I mean, when we're looking at policy and regulation, you really have to understand it and you have to see it in action before you can make any type of opinion or recommendation on it. So as a committee, what we're doing right now is just educating ourselves, but we're also looking at solutions to this. And I think one of the most important things is to have a diverse law enforcement agency. And that's something that the Dallas Chief of Police also recommended. He extended an invitation for people who are passionate about this topic to engage and work for the police department and help solve some of these problems in the community. So and I think it's important. It's definitely a different light. You know, I go on ride-alongs, and as a community member, I get to see what officers engage with, and I've gained a deeper appreciation for what they do. And that's also an invitation that we have here at the department. If somebody wants to come on a ride-along, you know, come on down and really get to see for yourself what it is to be out in the streets. And I've gained a great appreciation for this, and, you know, it helps me understand things a lot more. And so I guess that's all really that I have is this. We have a committed committee to really help work on building strengthening our community.
Tim Doyle, I give you a chance to have some last words, but I'm also wondering what law enforcement officers need to hear from national leadership that makes you feel supported in doing your job. What kind of words do you crave from the president, from Loretta Lynch, from folks who come out and take the microphone after an event like this and have something to say as a law enforcement officer, what is it that you want to hear?
Well, I think those people who have that much power and influence, they need to be careful about what they come out and say right after an incident. We've seen some cases with these national leaders, and they kind of jump on a bandwagon and they'll say things before they have all the facts. And, you know, sometimes even a video doesn't tell you everything, and there's more information is going to come out as these shootings or whatever they are investigated. So I would ask people to give us the benefit of the doubt. Police officers every day deal with situations multiple times that most people never deal with in their life. And, you know, we're like everyone else. We want to go home at the end of the day. We want to go home and see our families. And so we need that leadership to really step into our shoes. I don't think a lot of them have ever really been there. They talk like they have. They talk about what reform is needed, but they never really say what that is. So I would ask that the people not react to these talking points and wait for the facts and come to your own conclusions and don't just, you know, believe what a certain group or a certain person is telling you. You know, do your research and make your own conclusions on all these things that are happening in our country.
Chief, do you have any input from your officers that is expressing any hesitation to fully do their job and engage in activities that protect the public if they have a sense that they're not being supported? Are you hearing that at all?
You know, the greatest sense that I'm seeing right now is the officers are on high alert, which they should be, and they are committed like they have never been committed before. But I will tell you, it does cause a strain on families. Mothers, fathers, spouses, children of police officers right now are concerned more than ever before when their loved one leaves for work each day. And that is a sad state to be in as a country.
I think that's a place to leave it off there. I want to say thank you to all three of you for coming and sharing your thoughts and your time. Chief Jegeris, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Von Vargas, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
Tim Doyle, we appreciate your service. Thank you.
Thank you.